We now have to go over to adrenergic pharmacology, and here I want to describe the system first of norepinephrine neurotransmission. Here we're going to have more complexity than we saw in terms of the cholinergic nerve ending, but the general principles are for the most part the same. You're going to synthesize the neurotransmitter, you're going to release it by excitation of the nerve membrane here, and it's going to go across the junction and interact with receptors on the effector cells. However, I have to describe the steps to you in much more detail, so we'll start at the beginning with tyrosine. Tyrosine is the precursor molecule of the catecholamines, and by that we mean not only norepinephrine, we also mean dopamine and epinephrine. And tyrosine is taken into the nerve endings by an uptake system, an active uptake system, and is a substrate for the enzyme tyrosine hydroxylase. This enzyme, which is not outside the nerve ending, it's actually present inside the nerve ending, item one here, is the rate-limiting step in the synthesis of norepinephrine. And this then forms dihydroxyphenylalanine, or DOPA, L-DOPA, and this is a substrate for the enzyme DOPA decarboxylase, which is converting DOPA to the compound dopamine. Now, in most sympathetic nerve endings, probably all, dopamine is not the transmitter, but is actually the precursor molecule to norepinephrine. And it's a substrate for the enzyme called dopamine beta hydroxylase. And dopamine beta hydroxylase, as it converts dopamine to norepinephrine, actually leads to the accumulation of norepinephrine in these little circular granules here, just in the same way that we sort of described the ability of acetylcholine to be sequestered in these granules. The catecholamines, like norepinephrine, can also be put into these granules, waiting for their release with an excitatory event. Now, although there are inhibitors of tyrosine hydroxylase, they have no clinical uses. Inhibitors of DOPA decarboxylase are not used specifically in what we call autonomic pharmacology, but we will see them later when we discuss the matter of the use of levodopa as a drug for treatment of Parkinson's disease. We actually prevent metabolism of DOPA to dopamine in peripheral tissues by using an inhibitor of DOPA decarboxylase. We have no drugs that are used clinically that will interfere with the conversion of dopamine to norepinephrine. So as far as synthesis is concerned, although molecules do exist that inhibit these different enzymes, they have very limited clinical applicability. Now, what's going to happen to norepinephrine in terms of its release? Well, the release mechanism is very similar to the release mechanism that we've described for acetylcholine. You're going to have the influx of calcium. It's not drawn specifically as an influx shown here in the diagram for simplicity reasons, but what we're saying is that calcium influx initiates the release of amines by causing fusion of these vesicles with the presynaptic membrane. So norepinephrine will be released into the junction and can activate receptors according to which receptors are present on the effector cells, alpha, beta, etc. And that's very, very similar to what we described for acetylcholine. Where we begin to see some divergences, however, is in what is the major mechanism for termination of the action of norepinephrine on these receptors. And that actually is the mechanism involving reuptake of norepinephrine back into the nerve ending. And this is by a system that's referred to as uptake 1. And we now also use interchangeably with that system the idea of a norepinephrine transporter system. So in order to, if you like, terminate the action of norepinephrine, this transporter system, uptake 1, has to be operable. In other words, we bring norepinephrine away from this junction by bringing it back into the nerve ending. Notice that does not happen with acetylcholine. We never mentioned anything about that. We said there's an uptake system for choline, but not for acetylcholine. So here we have an uptake system for norepinephrine, which is probably the major way of terminating the action of norepinephrine at post-junctional receptors. Now, what else could happen, however? Well, you might get some diffusion away from this site. That's a possibility. And to some extent, enzymes present outside of the site and also in tissues close by, glial cells, like catecholomethyltransferase, may also be responsible to a small extent in metabolizing norepinephrine and therefore reducing its activity at the level of these receptors. But it is a minor pathway. The major pathway is uptake through uptake 1. There is also, in many nerve endings, a feedback mechanism. And that feedback mechanism, as shown here, as I'm describing for you, in the ability of some norepinephrine that's been released into this junction to actually come back and hit a receptor that's prejunctional, right, or presynaptic, which is a receptor for norepinephrine referred to as an alpha-2 receptor. And this is an autoregulatory mechanism because the alpha-2 activation actually inhibits the release of norepinephrine. It may also inhibit tyrosine hydroxylase. So it's a feedback mechanism. So that also influences, it doesn't terminate action of norepinephrine, but it does influence sympathomimetic transmission. So you've got several things on the go here, but the most important for us in the context of termination, once again, is the uptake 1 or norepinephrine transporter. Now you'll notice that in the nerve ending, there is also a mobile pool of norepinephrine distinctive from the norepinephrine present in the vesicles. This mobile pool does provide some of the norepinephrine for uptake into the vesicles, and it can be modified by enzymes present in the presynaptic nerve ending. The most important of these is monoamine oxidase, or MAO. So MAO can actually work to metabolize norepinephrine to inactive products. It also happens to work on dopamine and therefore can control dopamine levels in this nerve ending as well as norepinephrine nerve ending, present in the nerve ending. It works on the mobile pool of norepinephrine, not on the granular norepinephrine. Now, just thinking about this, you would say, all right, I've already told you that we don't have many drugs that work on synthesis. But I can tell you, we have quite a lot of drugs that can work at the level of the mobile pool, at the level of monoamine oxidase, at the level of the transporter, at the level of the release mechanism, at the level of alpha-2 autoreceptors. And all of those, all right, have to be considered by us, as well as drugs that might work at the level of the receptors themselves. So adrenergic neurotransmission, as you can see in our description here, is much more complex than transmission in the cholinergic systems. Now we're going to see each of these aspects now in a somewhat different way. We've talked about how we synthesize norepinephrine, and I want to remind you that tyrosine hydroxylase is rate limiting, but it has very little clinical applicability. It may be relevant to physiology, but it's a very minimal clinical applicability. We said that the DOPA form, dihydroxyphenylalanine, is converted to dopamine by an enzyme called DOPA decarboxylase, otherwise known to biochemists as L-aromatic amino acid decarboxylase. And we do not use drugs specifically in peripheral pharmacology for this purpose, but we do use carbidopa to inhibit that enzyme when we're treating Parkinson's disease. Dopamine gets converted by beta hydroxylase to norepinephrine. That's stored in granules. And we may be able to inactivate some of our presynaptic norepinephrine via monoamine oxidase when it's in the mobile pool, but not the granular norepinephrine. Here we describe again the process of membrane depolarization. And then, of course, the release of norepinephrine has actions on adrenoreceptors, which are the alpha and beta type, depending on individual tissues. We mentioned that the major mechanism of termination of norepinephrine is its removal from the junction, and this is uptake 1, the system that we described, We said we can activate prejunctional receptors, alpha-2 receptors, in terms of feedback inhibition. I also mentioned to you diffusion and potential metabolism by catechol O-methyltransferase. I feel it worthwhile to restate this for you here so that you can see that it's hard to remember everything by just looking at a diagram, and I want you to try and memorize the things also by this mechanism as well. Now, what about drug targets? I start off here with monoamine oxidase. We don't use monoamine oxidase inhibitors for their peripheral effects, but we still continue to use MAO inhibitors for central nervous system dysfunction. For example, inhibitors of MAO have been used traditionally in the treatments of depression or treatments of anxiety states, particularly panic attacks. And certain inhibitors of monoamine oxidase are used in Parkinson's disease, where we have a deficiency of dopamine. What I would suggest you do is that you know the names of perhaps one or two MAO inhibitors. If you can only go for one, I always prefer phenelzine because it is the most widely used of the MAO inhibitors in CNS pharmacology. But there are others. Isocarboxazid is one and tranylcypramine is one. What are they going to do? Well, they're going to increase the prejunctional levels of norepinephrine. And that means that when you get excitation of that nerve ending, you probably have got more norepinephrine to be released. So they're acting indirectly, aren't they, inhibitors of MAO, to enhance sympathomimetic action. That's how they could work. Now, there are two types of monoamine oxidase, and you've got to remember the two types. Monoamine oxidase A metabolizes pretty much anything anywhere. Although it is found in high content in the liver, it's found pretty much anywhere. So we sometimes underline the A for anywhere to remind you that this monoamine oxidase A. What does this metabolize? Well, norepinephrine certainly, so this is a major action, obviously, in sympathetic nerve terminals. But it also metabolizes serotonin. This becomes perhaps more important when we get to the central nervous system. We mentioned tyramine as being present in foodstuffs and beverages. Tyramine is metabolized by monoamine oxidase. And this is of interest to you because if you inhibit its metabolism, then sometimes tyramine gets to a high enough level that it's going to exert effects on sympathetic tone. And you need to keep that at the back of your mind. Now, monoamine oxidase B has got a much narrower substrate spectrum. It really likes dopamine. And this is the dominant way which of enzymes in the brain that actually metabolize dopamine. And so we remind ourselves about the brain by underlining the B of brain for monoamine oxidase B. Right, what about drug actions at the level of the mobile pool? Now, this may not seem like much to you, but effects on the mobile pool are used very extensively in medicine. Because this is a class of drugs, the indirect acting sympathomimetics, that has central nervous system stimulants in it, and also many drugs that are used as decongestants. What's going to happen with drugs that influence the mobile pool is that they're going to release norepinephrine into the junction. So you're going to enhance norepinephrine's actions at the postjunctional receptors. Amphetamine does this. Now, the primary uses of amphetamine are not for sympathetic stimulation, although it will do that. If you take amphetamine, you're probably going to get signs of sympathetic stimulation. But its primary uses, of course, are in the central nervous system in terms of its CNS stimulant properties there. But ephedrine is used very extensively as a decongestant, and it causes vasoconstriction, and the vasoconstriction is responsible to making it sort of easier for you to get, you know, airflow through various spaces. And so it works in a reasonable way and is really the prototype of many drugs that are decongestants. So recognize that their mechanism is indirect. They indirectly release norepinephrine from nerve endings. That means that they won't have any actions on receptors that are not innervated. If a receptor is not innervated, that means there's no norepinephrine there. And if there's no norepinephrine there, that means that you're not going to get an effect. Uptake 1. Uptake 1 is the major mode of termination of the action of norepinephrine. And this can be inhibited, again, by indirect sympathomimetics. Your best example is cocaine. Again, cocaine, you know, is not a commonly used drug in terms of medicine, although a commonly used drug recreationally, but cocaine is used as both a local anesthetic and a vasoconstrictor in a surgical sense. And how does it work? It works by actually preventing the reuptake of norepinephrine. And in the brain, it also actually prevents the reuptake of dopamine. But in the periphery, it's largely used to increase postjunctural actions of norepinephrine by blocking the uptake system. What about the prejunctional alpha receptors, the ones that are alpha 2? Well, if you remember that these are involved in order regulation, you might guess then, if you were to activate those receptors with drugs, that you probably decrease norepinephrine release from the nerve endings. And you probably will, because this is an autoreceptor action. And drugs like, for example, clonidine or alpha-methyl dopa, which forms alpha-methylnorepinephrine, are drugs that activate alpha-2 receptors. What about granular uptake of norepinephrine? Well, we have a very old drug that prevents that called reserpine. And reserpine, by preventing the uptake into granules, really means that there's less norepinephrine available there for release when you get excitation of a nerve ending. Where would that come in? How would you sort of see that as a clinical use? Well, if you can decrease norepinephrine at sympathetic nerve terminals in the vasculature, that would probably mean then you'll decrease vascular tone. So reserpine ought to lower blood pressure by acting to decrease vasoconstriction. And that's what its clinical use is. Although it's not used commonly, it is used in hypertension. And you can understand why it would work in that fashion. You can actually block the release from granules. Guanethidine, also used in hypertension, decreases the actions of norepinephrine by preventing the release from the granules. And of course, although there's only two lines here of it, you can activate postjunctional receptors. Why is there such a short amount here? Well, because you see, we have to talk about all the direct activating sympathomimetic drugs, and of course, all of the drugs that block those receptors as antagonists, and that's going to take us some time. So this is just a sort of a setting us up for that aspect of things.